encourage people to say or write the things they need to do before they die. One of my neighbors, who was a mechanic, and he would, every time my garage door would open, he would come over and see what was going on. And Dan, in the last few weeks before he died, came to faith. And one of the things that marked his conversion was he wanted to set things right. He wanted to set things right that he knew were not the way they should be. And that, I think, is exactly the way it ought to go on. Sometimes they can do things to help those who are left behind, and they ought to think about those things. And sometimes, I know in one case with Dan Tarbox, it was that he had gotten a car for his son, and he had written letters. That was before it was the popular thing to do. He wrote letters to his children because one of them was about this high on me at the time. And those things continue to minister on long after they're gone. Here's a couple of other things that Jim shared with me that I think are worth sharing with you. Ministry to the dying is ministry to you. The people who are dying have a clearer view than we do. If they're Christians, if they're seeing it the way they ought to. I remember talking to a friend of mine about the commentaries on the Psalms. The most insightful commentaries on the Psalms were written by guys who were in the German concentration camps, because they saw life more clearly. I have to tell you, when a 22-year-old sings a song they wrote out of the depth of their experience, it's not the same as Fanny Crosby writing out of blindness. There is something that suffering does that clarifies your view. And so those people, don't just make it a one-way ministry, but say, what have you learned? What have you learned in the process? What's God teaching you? Boy, the way, that's also great fuel for the funeral service. Those things, get those gathered and collected, because they can be very useful. As Jim said, dying people live day by day. They know they don't have an indefinite future, and therefore they're living their lives like Jesus said we ought to be living ours. So learn from those who are dying. Oh, by the way, about things that can minister to your family, I have a friend named Fred Smith who's now with the Lord. And I'm not sure whether it was my suggestion or not. I did mention it to him at one point. He made a video to be played at his funeral. And it was classic Fred all the way. But he actually is up on the big screen in this funeral. And he says, I was thinking about asking if anybody, if it couldn't hear me, I'd turn up the volume. He said, but I thought he'd clear the place if I did. So he goes on and basically gives his testimony. And says, you know, I know where I'm going. I hope you join me there. Man, that's powerful. That's powerful. Not everybody can afford to have a videographer come and whatever. But for him, it was a way of using his death as a stewardship. Here's another area. Help people with the financial dimensions of their funeral. And that swings both ways. I think you know that. You know, I remember with one of my friends whose wife suddenly died, riding through Restland, and you know, here's the funeral director saying, here's a tree and a pond. Wouldn't she like that? And, you know, his response was, she's dead. You know, what do you mean tree, pond? What is this? You know, in that sense, you could spend a lot of money for a shade tree spot. It's not going to help anybody. There are times when it's a waste of money. There are also times when being too cheap makes other people pay. And I have an example of that. A friend of mine decided he didn't want his wife to be saddled with the funeral expenses, although they had plenty of money. And so he made an arrangement for this group where you have a truck comes by, $200, to pick up your body, whisk it away, and then use it for medical research. The problem with some of those folks is they bring it back. Now, that's a little awkward. 2 months later, after they've used it, we actually had a guy in our church in medical school, and we weren't sure but what he was going to see that body. But my point is, in that way, you leave your wife looking like a cheapskate when that isn't what she would have chosen. So sometimes you have to negotiate and say, okay, I understand where you are. For instance, one of the ways would be, okay, I don't want to spend money, cremate me. Well, that may be okay, but how does your wife feel about that? She's the one that's going to be sitting there with the mourners. You're gone. Okay, cardboard box works for you. What's it do for her? So sometimes you can come in as a sort of third party and help people think through. Let's think about the way in which this looks. There can be wasted money. There can be money that's spent too cheap. When you gather with people in the hospital, ask for their life story. Ask for the stories about their life, their childhood, whatever, because that's going to come in handy if you do funerals the way I do. Also, ask for their testimony. That's vitally important. One of two things will happen. If they have a clear testimony, you now have the message to share for them at their funeral. I look at that as I'm standing in their shoes and I'm telling those people for them about their faith in Jesus. That's my job. That's my stewardship, not only to them, but also to God. But suppose they're not a believer. Then there's value in that, because A, you know it, and you know what you need to pray for and work for. But also, what you can do is you can share the gospel with them, and at the funeral, when you're wondering what to say, you say, I met with Sally last week, and we talked about death and what comes afterwards. I'd like to share with you what I shared with her. Now, you're not saying she believed it, but it is true that you shared it with her. It's a perfectly legitimate way of laying the gospel out there, so you've got an entree, as it were, for doing that. Okay, just a side comment. My experience with hospice has always been good. It's always been good in terms of their willingness to work with you and with the family. Okay, now when it comes to the funeral service, I have kind of a unique style that I do, but it's just what I've done, and it seems to work relatively well. I always, if at all possible, I orchestrate a family gathering, family and friends. Now, it puts the whammy on me, because now I've got to come up with an orchestration of all the data that I'm going to get that night. And I've got to reshuffle the cards, decide what I'm going to use, and put together a biographical sketch. But what happens in that meeting, and it was especially true with Jerry Johnson, because Brenda was there answering the phone while we were with Jerry's brothers and sisters and his widow. And we told stories, and we laughed till we cried. And people would say, well, I remember this about Jerry. And I was writing like crazy, writing all this stuff down. And it was the most joyful grief. I don't even know how to say it. In fact, in the black culture, it's fascinating to me. Because I went to Jerry's father's funeral. And in the middle of that funeral, there are people literally weeping and wailing and even collapsing. And they have those ladies in waiting in the white outfits that sort of help them along. And the organist is playing When the Saints Go Marching In. And we're boogieing around. And I'm saying to one of my black brothers, I can't handle this. I feel happy, and when I do, I feel guilty because they're sad. And he said, it's not a problem for us. It's not a problem for us. There's a sense in which you have grief and joy in the same scenario, and especially for a believer. Is that not true? You're rejoicing because they're with the Lord. You're grieving because you miss them, but they're both true, and you don't deny either one of those. When you come to that gathering, it's a very healthy thing. One of the things that also happens that sometimes is strange is you'll ask, as I did just recently in a gathering, I said, can you tell me this woman's testimony? The sad answer was no, nobody knew it, which was really sad, because she'd been a part of our church and you would have hoped that they would have known it. But I was doing a funeral for someone's grandmother. And I was told she was a wonderful believer and whatever. And at this gathering, I asked the question, can you tell me about her conversion, her testimony? And her husband, who they thought was an unbeliever, said, no, but I can tell you mine. He tells how he came to faith, and nobody in that family knew it. And so you're saying, whoa, there's a bonus for you. You know, and you can work with that. But sometimes you learn things in those conversations that are really helpful. Okay, I do not do canned funerals. There are times, well, let's face it, no matter when I do a funeral, I burn the midnight oil. We have a man in our church who's dying right now. I may do a funeral in the next couple of days. When it's Sunday coming, and it's Friday afternoon, and you got a funeral going on, the bottom line is it's going to take me a day or two to put together what has to happen in a funeral, to get meet with the family, to get all the data together, whatever, and to put that together. It's going to take me a day or two. That comes from somewhere, and probably it comes from sleep. It just has to come from somewhere. But I will not do somebody the disservice of reading a canned sermon. I will not do them the disservice. They were unique, they were an individual, and they deserve a custom job, in my opinion. And the other thing I'll throw in for good measure is I never take money for funerals. Number one, it's our ministry as a church to that family. You know, that's not a time for 5 cents, please, so to speak, you know, Charlie Brown style. It's not a time for holding your hand out. And oftentimes, it's not a time when they have money coming out their ears. It speaks loudly to them to say, I do this for the Lord. The other thing it does, you're not working for them. You're working for God. They're not paying your bills. You know, you look to God for that. So for me, it's freeing. I know to whom I have to answer. But what I do when I come to a funeral is I always ask myself, A, what the unique circumstances are, and two, what's the question? What's the question? Now, when you come to Jim's wife's passing away and another woman who died in very similar circumstances, somebody said to me, why is it the good always die young? So now you've got a question about God's timing, and that opens the door. In Donna's case with Jim, I don't know why, but I was drawn to Psalm 73. Remember what the psalmist said, you know, surely God is good to Israel and whatever. And basically what Asaph is saying is, hey, God, you're supposed to prosper the righteous and punish the wicked. How come those guys are getting it good and I'm taking it on the chin? Remember, and he says, then I thought about just giving it all up and whatever. And then I came to the sanctuary of God. And it's from that point on, he begins to see things as God sees them. And now he says, yeah, these guys, they get it for a short term. But he said, they're not going to have it in eternity. And then he says to God, you're with me here in my suffering. And you'll be with me there in heaven. I've got you here. I've got you there. The goodness of God, the nearness of God is my good. That's what's good. Not the prolonging of life for some particular period of years. And when they're a believer, how much closer to God can you get than being in his presence? So anyway, I like to take those and deal with it. Suicide, I have been unselected to do a funeral because I won't ignore or hide or conceal the fact that somebody's killed themselves. To me, you got to deal with the issues and answer the questions. If I were doing a suicide funeral, I would have 3 points at least. One, suicide is sin. Suicide is sin. God says you shouldn't take life. Suicide is saying, I can't trust God to provide for me in my time of need. It's unbelief. It is sin. Point two, suicide is not the unpardonable sin. Refusing to trust in Jesus is the unpardonable sin. Suicide is sin, but not the unpardonable sin. And three, in one sense, it's easier to understand why a Christian would commit suicide than an unbeliever. Because the truth is, when a Christian dies, they do go to heaven. The thing that's wrong about suicide is, I'm bumping the schedule. But they're right in the sense that they know that death takes you to him. And so I want people to understand. I don't want to tap dance around an issue as though that didn't really happen. Everybody knows it happened. And how are you going to comfort people if you deny the very facts of the death that you're trying to deal with?